We'll wind up the year even as we began, talking about books.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Today we're going to look back at some books that impressed us this year, and then we'll see what impresses Garrison Keillor on Scribble. Well, here we are. Another year has gone by, and it has become the fashion, Roald, to talk about the best books of the year, but I'm not sure that I'm qualified to do that.
Well, we've only read about 50 of them or so.
Boy, you look at the books that come out.
1,500 fiction titles a year in the United States alone.
Boy. And I have not been a great fan of fiction this year. I have read mostly nonfiction.
Well, you've read some very good nonfiction. However.
Oh, I've read some extraordinary books, and we're going to talk about them, at least briefly, to give you a summary of some of those things. But how do you function in something like that when people say, okay, what's the best book of the year? How do you know? You can't survey the whole thing.
Well, and if you ask me, it will vary probably from week to week. I mean, there are a number of really good books that I probably would not have read if we weren't doing this program that people have suggested and passed on to me, and I'm glad I did.
What I do is always look at the year-end totting up in the Times Literary Supplement, and they ask their different reviewers to give the two or three best books of the year. There's almost no duplication.
Well, that was true last year, too. I must have looked at 13 or 14 different best lists, Christian Science Monitor. They don't agree at all. There might be one or two books that in which several of the lists named that book. But
I remember in the year when Gone Girl came out.
Right.
That was on so many lists because it was just a mind-blowing thing to read, a repellent thing to read,
right.
Ultimately, but what a book. And you look at that, you think, how could the author have come up with this?
That's the one book that I have a standing offer of dinner for anybody who can tell me 50 pages ahead of the end where it's going to end.
Yeah, but you can't have cheated by reading reviews or seeing the movie.
No. Well, they don't even give it away, but that is an end I did not even expect. And yet, looking back on it, it was the only possible ending.
Yeah. And when you see something finely wrought like that, I've talked a lot about structure and poetry, but structure, a plot structure in a book, that was as close to perfection as anything I can think of.
Yeah, it was extremely well done.
Well, what grabbed your attention this year? What really caught your...
Well, let me first of all start. I probably have heard more from more readers or listeners to this program and who have incorporated it into at least several book clubs that I know is that improbable book that I forget when I talked about it, but it was a few months ago, A Man Called Ove.
Oh, yeah.
By Frederick Bachman.
That is a stunner. That really
Well, it's a crazy book. I mean, it's just the story of a curmudgeon. It isn't terribly likely. It isn't, but somehow, I don't know what that book has, but people really seem to like that book.
What that book has is evidence that there is good in human beings, and you may not see it. And in some people, it seems to have all together disappeared. But the goodness in people wins out in that book all the way around. It's just, except for some hopeless villains. But that was the thing. You read that book, and it just makes you feel good. It really does. It is alternately, it makes you alternately laugh and cry all the way through it. It's just amazing. And that, too, is a book that's beautifully structured. When you get to that second last chapter, you think, oh, wait a minute. This is where we started.
Right. Well, there are sequels to it that I'm told are probably not as good. But is one of those things where, you know, this might be a one-shot deal.
Yeah, I hate sequels. Right. Particularly if you read something that is so good, you think, leave it alone. Same way with the movie. That was perfect. Don't try to improve it. Don't try to copy it. But A Man Named Ovi, you're right. That deserves being listed on everywhere because that was an extraordinary book. One of my extraordinary books, I mentioned they were all nonfiction for the most part, is Sapiens by Harari. As you know, I'm a great fan of science, a great fan of history, all sorts of things. I'm interested in the whole world. And here is a man who puts the whole world in one book. If you want to know who you are and what you are and how you got there and what are the things that move you and bedevil you and what is moving through society, this is an extraordinary accomplishment. Takes it from the very beginning, back when there were, I think, about 6 subspecies of humans. Our species seems to have won out probably by killing all the others. I don't know. But anyway, one species survived to populate the whole world. He takes it all the way back to that and brings it right up to today. And he does not have an axe to grind. He is not arguing for any particular position. He's simply showing you what we know. And where there are interpretations of what we know, he gives you all of them. It is a singular accomplishment. I have never read a book that so intrigued me as Sapiens. So if you'd like to know more about yourself, there's the book to read.
The other book of fiction that many listeners have talked to me about and read after we recommended it or even before we recommended it was Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See.
Yeah.
That's just an extraordinary book, too. It's
if you have not read that book, that should go on your list. You're right. That is another book that seems to have popped up everywhere.
Yeah, very briefly, if you haven't heard of it yet, it's a blind girl and her father in occupied Paris who come into contact with German soldiers, and one in particular who develops a relationship with the blind girl, and that's all I'll say. It is just beautifully written.
Mm-hmm. And once again, an interesting premise, and where did that come from? I don't know. But it is an extraordinary work of fiction and certainly worth your while. Another nonfiction work that you really ought to read is The Brothers. Now, the reason I cite that is because if you are distressed by all the things that have gone wrong with the world, and in particular our incredibly convoluted and unhappy relationship with the Middle East, this will tell you where it came from, how it all got started. It's a depressing story in some ways, but it's better to know, why do people in Iran hate us? There's a very good reason. They're totally justified. This explains what went wrong. And it comes from good intentions. Dwight Eisenhower, as president, turned against the Republican establishment. He decided to keep Social Security and all those things. But one of the things he wanted to avoid was further war. And the Dulles brothers came to him and said, we don't have to go to war. We can do things quietly. And that got the CIA started out on terrible things, assassinations, plots to, one disastrous plot was to overthrow Iran's democracy and install the Shah for the benefit of our oil industry. And Iran has never forgiven us that. And then everything bad kind of flowed from what happened between John Foster and Alan Dulles. And it's nice to see how that all started. It's a tough story, but Stephen Kinzer does a very good job of explaining in detail exactly what we did and why. And you can see the consequences around you everywhere. So it's The Brothers by Stephen Kinzer. There are five books I say that you ought to read. One I've mentioned, Sapiens. A second one is Brothers by Stephen Kinzer. And let me mention right now a third one, Dark Money by Jane Meyer. If you would understand politics today, you really ought to see how it all developed. And the whole story is told by Jane Meyer. Once again, this is not a polemic. It is simply telling you who did what and why, what the purpose was, and how it is all working like a charm. So Dark Money by Jane Meyer, Stephen Kinzer's The Brothers, to help you understand the world we are in right now, and Sapiens to help you understand who and what you are and the society in which you live. Pretty big stuff, huh?
It is.
Yeah. You got a piece of fiction to go with that?
Well, no, but I have a poem.
Good.
Mary Oliver is out this past year with a new book of poems called Felicity, mm-hmm. which generally deals with their poems written about and to her companion of many years who died in 2005. But they're poems about love.
Mm-hmm.
And so on a brighter note, I would recommend that book. I don't have that book because it's one I keep lending out to people. You've got to read this. But I do have a Mary Oliver poem that I thought would be a good way of, you got to read The Ballad of the Harp Weaver last week. I want to read Mary Oliver's Why I Wake Early.
Okay.
If you're not familiar with Mary Oliver, this ought to tempt you to go out and buy Felicity.
Okay.
It's a short book, but it's worth it. Why I Wake Early. Hello, sun in my face. Hello, you who make the morning and spread it over the fields and into the faces of the tulips and the nodding morning glories, and into the windows of even the miserable and the crotchety. Best preacher that ever was, dear star, that just happens to be where you are in the universe to keep us from ever darkness, to ease us with warm touching, to hold us in the great hands of light. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Watch now how I start the day in happiness, in kindness.
That's beautiful.
That's the book that won her the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award.
Yeah, deservedly so. The name of it again?
The new one is Felicity. I'm reading from her book called Why I Wake Early.
Why I Wake Early is, if you don't have that, you ought to get it.
You ought to get that.
Because that we don't know about Felicity, but we really know about this one. Another thing we know is that we have to make room for Garrison Keillor, which is no chore at all because he's always entertaining and informative, and we'll do that now. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Roll Tweet and I are just going through some books of things that you might have missed this year that you might want to read. We'll kind of run through those titles before we leave again, but where would you go now on your recommendations?
Well, I did read some nonfiction myself. I have always liked, ever since fourth or fifth grade when I got into ants and bees and read everything in the library that had anything to do with them, nature. And it turns out the two best books, I think, that I've read this year, both recommended to me, I think, by Don Erickson, have to do with trails. The first of these is called The Old Way by Robert McFarlane, who's just a beautiful, exquisite writer, English writer. And his book deals with a journey across the chalk cliffs of England, a trail that goes almost from one end of England to the other, that is some 5,000 years old. It's so old, it goes back to Neolithic times, so old that the path is worn down below the surface, so that people have been walking there for 5,000 years. And he talks about trails and other famous trails in England and fellow writers who write about trails and so forth. So that, it's a really good book. But even better is an American one written by Robert Moore, M-O-O-R, simply called On Trails. And it starts out with a trip up the Appalachian Trail, which he took to get going on this book. And then it goes up to Newfoundland to trails being left by microscopic creatures in the stone up there. And then goes to Africa and talks about how elephants make trails. And the whole thing is about how humans, in order, how all of life, not just humans, we all make trails. And why trails are made and how trails are made and what they mean. And it ends with the most improbable character you have probably ever met, a man who about two decades ago, now is in his 70s, got so restless that he sold his house, he sold all his possessions, he walked away from a wife, walked away from children, and has been walking. Has no home. He walks. And Moore walks with him through about 50 miles of Texas as he's just walking along the highway toward New Orleans eventually.
Sounds like Forrest Gump in a way.
Well, he is, but what an incredible character.
Yeah.
And he's not bitter. He's not down. He just compulsively walks.
Boy.
But you stop to think about the way in which all of us make trails. I mean, we make trails through books, you and I.
That's true.
But there isn't a living thing that doesn't somehow make trails.
I've often said that, I've always been a public person, radio, TV, politics, giving talks, doing plays, and so on. But actually I'm intensely private in my normal behavior. And I leave a trail from my house to the radio station to the park back to my house, and that's it. That's the trail. Those are the trails I follow over and over and over again, with a side trip to the grocery store because you have to eat.
Yeah. Well, I used to walk a lot. I can't anymore.
But, you were all over the place.
But, well, I've hiked in the Andes and I've hiked the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu, and I've hiked. Actually, when I was in graduate school, one of the things I did to sort of get rid of pressure is to maybe take Saturday off, and I left trails all over Chicago. Mm-hmm. I've on several occasions I walked from the University of Chicago campus where we were living, 8 miles to downtown Chicago, and you go through neighborhoods that you never knew existed. Each of which is like its own little different, trails don't have to be out in the woods. They can be in cities.
I did something like that when I was entering the seminary at St. Ambrose in 1946. A friend of mine, I.S. Johnson, was also going to the seminary. We'd been separated. His mother sent him to a military school, and they were living in Chicago at that time. So he invited me to come up and spend a month with him before the two of us went to the seminary. So I did, and he was able to finagle me a job as an usher at the Chicago Theater for 2 or 3 weeks. But in my time off, I walked around Chicago. I remember one day we were in North Halsted. I went over to the Lincoln Park Zoo, walked all around there, walked all the way downtown, got to the Field Museum as it was closing,
right,
and then noticed that the shell was, people were assembling at that shell for a concert, so I went over and sat down. And the greatest performance of my life took place there with Buckingham Fountain in the back. They played Lys Les Preludes. The wind seemed to be going through the violins. Helen Traubel came out and sang the Liebestod. I was in heaven.
Right.
But that was the end of a full day of walking in Chicago. And I took many shorter trips.
I loved it.
Yeah. It's when you're young, especially, and you are ever youthful, you know, even though you're getting as old and crotchety as I am, you still maintain that great spirit of youth. But you certainly expressed it in walking all over the place.
I did. I walked on, walked and walked.
Well, as I think back, so did I. I spent a lot of time on my feet. We used to go snake hunting every year, my sons and I. And it was just something we did to get out and walk in a difficult terrain all day long. But those walking days are, you know, there's a treadmill town, which I view with a shudder. But so that's, let's see. Do I have, I want to recommend not a couple of books, but a couple of movies. I said three books I thought are critical for you to read to understand things, but there are two movies that make it painless. Michael Lewis has written an illuminating book on The Big Short, about the big financial meltdown, exactly how it happened and why. But they made a movie of it, which is just as illuminating. Actually, it simplifies the matter considerably and is wonderfully involving. And then another movie that was put together by Tom McCarthy and Josh Singer called Spotlight. It was on that investigative section of the Boston Herald,
right,
which uncovered the pedophile scandal and made plain the scope of it. It is not in any way, I don't think any way accusatory, but it shows you what a great newspaper can do and how we are in danger of losing one of the most important sources of information we have as people turn from newspapers to the totally unreliable internet and the so-called news sources there. Well, anyway, we have come down toward the end. Do you want to summarize those titles you just gave us before?
Well, I can do that. I've talked about Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See, and then our listener's favorite, apparently, is A Man Called Ove by Frederick Bachmann. And then a couple of nature books on walking. The Old Way by Robert McFarlane, and On Trails by Robert Moore.
And let's not forget Why I Wake.
Why I Wake Early.
Yeah.
Yes, by Mary Oliver.
And my books are The Brothers by Stephen Kinzer, Dark Money by Jane Meyer, and then Sapiens by a man named Harari. That's an awful lot of reading, and we threw in a couple of movies just to make it easy. But I hope you take an interest in the things we say, and I hope you'll be listening next week. We get back to another interview in our regular schedule of conversation on the next edition of Scribble. Happy New Year.